Well, it's another week, and it's a special day. Happy Valentine's Day to all you out there listening. So today we're just going to play some love song. I'm kidding, we're not going to do that. But we are going to talk about life. We're going to talk about love. We're going to talk about standing for life and love. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you for tuning in on Joy 620 or online at WRJZ.com. We'll have this up for podcast by the end of the week as well on iTunes and other places. You can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com on our Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter. You can find us everywhere there is a computer. So we're certainly glad that you're listening. So today I do want to focus a little bit on Valentine's and just talk about love and what that should mean for us. Now I will let you know that that I'm not going to tell you to go out and buy roses and do all those things. You should be making it a point to love better tomorrow than you did the day before, right? So love better tomorrow than you did today. We should be doing that with our spouses, with our kids, with coworkers, with people that we're that we have relationship with. And so that should be something that we try to do every single day. But especially, you know, we take this day, you know, card makers make a lot of money on this day. Restaurants are booked tonight because it's Valentine's, and so take some time to love on your significant other the best you can. So what I want to do to start is read an article from the ERLC. You can find it at erlc.com, and it's about Valentine's, and it says 14 reasons to celebrate marriage on Valentine's Day. Now, some of you listening may not be married. Some of you may be a widow or a widower, and this will allow you a great time to reflect. Maybe some of you are married, and maybe it's early on in your marriage. Maybe you're looking to get married one day. But I think this is important, and it allows us to see the benefits of marriage, even from a secular sense, the benefits of marriage. So while St. Valentine's Day has been celebrated on February 14th since the 5th century, it was only in the 14th century that it became associated with love. The English poet Geoffrey Chaucer is said to have linked St. Valentine's Day with romance when he composed a poem in honor of the engagement between England's King Richard II and Anne of Bohemia, daughter of the Holy Roman Emperor. And so, while it's not always roses and chocolate, marriage has some unique benefits to offer. As the Book of Ecclesiastes say, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And so in honor of Valentine's Day, it's good to look at 14 reasons based on medical and social science studies why, when it comes to marriage, two are better than one. Well, the first, marriage is associated with improved psychological well-being and with reduced levels of depression. Number two, married men experience less depression and more happiness than bachelors do. I mean, go watch The Bachelor and you'll see the truth in that. Three, for women, marriage appears to offer some protection against cardiovascular disease. Number four, being married could improve your likelihood of surviving a heart attack and is associated with reduced length of hospital stay. Number five, marriage lowers the risk that both men and women will become victims of violence, including domestic violence. Six, married men find intercourse more emotionally and physically plausible than their unmarried peers. Number seven, married men earn between 10 and 40% more than otherwise comparable single men. Eight, young married men are twice as likely to report being happy as single men and men cohabitating. Married couples, households have on average substantially greater net worth than households with other types of living arrangements. And the list goes on and on. So marriage is not only from a biblical standpoint what we've been called to do, but from a even society says that the ideal scenario, the ideal situation for a family is a man and wife to be married in the home together. And so society say, science even says that is the ideal situation. So as you look at today, Valentine's Day, and as you look at your future or you reflect on your past or you look at what is in front of you, there are a number of benefits to marriage. And it was interesting at church on Sunday, the pastor was going through, and he's going to spend the next 9 weeks on the fruit of the Spirit. And the first one, he talked about love. And as we looked at love and what that means, at times we want to make our relationships mirror what we see on the television. And so we want to watch maybe Lifetime's a bad example because a lot of times there's violence and domestic violence involved. But we look at some of these romantic comedies and the fairies and rainbow type of love, and we want to make our marriage fit that. But what happens is we understand when we're watching, if you look, you'll watch those shows and you'll see that at no point do they sit down and pay the bills. At no point do they sit down and say, we got to get the kids here or get the kids there. At no point do they show a bad day at work or bad days at home or income going up and down. And see, they don't show a lot of that, but that is reality. They don't show them mowing their yard, like really mowing the yard or having to clean the house or doing those things. But marriage involves all of that. Marriage is messy. And so what real love is saying, even in those messy times, even in those messy days, I'm going to be here. And Andy Stanley, if you're familiar with Andy Stanley, he said he did a marriage series. And one of the things that he said that really stuck with me was, we as people, not just in our marriages, but as believers, should be a people that choose love and assume the best. So we need to assume the best and choose love. Now, what does that mean? That means that when I get up in the morning, I have to choose to love my wife. Now, some of you may say, well, what do you mean you have to choose? Don't you just do it? Well, that is a choice. I choose to love my wife. I choose to love my kids. I choose to love the people that I work with, the people that I interact with every single day. Because if you don't make that choice, if you don't intentionally say, I'm going to love my spouse, then guess what happens? There will be a day, maybe multiple days, maybe months, maybe years, where you look back and go, I wasn't loving them. I wasn't loving my spouse. But if we make an effort to choose love, then even when they mess up, even when they fail us, and folks, they are going to fail. Our spouses make terrible gods. We live in a broken world made up of broken people, which means that the spouse that you have is broken. You know, today on social media, you're seeing a lot of people express their love for their spouse, and they're only saying the good things. They're letting you know how much they love their spouse, how lucky they are. And those things are probably true statements. I'm not calling them liars. But they won't post that day when they get up and they have a knockdown, drag-out argument. They won't post the day where the husband forgot to pick up the milk or the wife forgot to pay a certain bill or vice versa. They won't post the day where we failed as parents and we acted out of anger in disciplining our child instead of out of love, grace, and mercy. See, we put up these facades on social media. And then when we see that, we go, oh, if I could just have their relationship. But folks, that we're broken people. And so what we have to understand is that means we have to make a choice that we're going to love them. And also, we have to assume the best. Now, we know what some people say, what assuming does. Well, I'm not going to say that here, but a lot of people know what that means. But in relationships, we need to assume the best and not the worst. And at times with our spouses, we find ourselves assuming the worst of them. Well, I tried to call them 3 times and they didn't answer. So are they with somebody else? Are they ignoring me? So we immediately jump to the extreme and assume the worst instead of just saying maybe their phone's in the purse. Maybe their phone is in the car. Maybe they just didn't hear it or see it or it's dead. So we need to assume the best of our spouses. And if we do that, our marriages will look better. Our marriages will be better And they will be something to write about one day. We'll be back.
Fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you if you're young at heart.
And we're back. This is Andrew Wood on this Valentine's evening. Hope you're having a good one. Remember, though, as we talked about in the first segment, choose to love tonight and in the morning. When their breath reeks, when their hair's a mess, at times when they smell, that is when, you know, when love really shows itself, is in those rough moments. Just like when Christ died for us for our worst days, we are to love our spouse on their worst days. When we said our vows, we said so, including those terrible days. And so let that be said of our marriages one day. Let our kids see that. Let them long for a relationship like their parents had, not one where they look back and go, I do know what I don't want is a relationship like my mom and dad. Let them not say that about our marriages. So enjoy your night. Hope that doesn't like, oh, great, I'm going to go and choose the love of my spouse tonight. But enjoy your night. But remember, we should be doing that every single day, loving well. And at times that's going to be difficult and hard, but that's what we signed up for when we got into relationships with broken and fallen people. Okay, so that's where we're at. So today, what I also want to do, kind of a continuation from last week. Last week we looked at a life ethic, a pro-life ethic. What does that mean? Why is that important? And so I want to continue with that as we look at our pro-life stance and what that means. And yes, it includes the womb, but what does it mean in our society? What has it meant in our society over the last few centuries? What does it look like if we get the life ethic wrong? What does it look like in our culture and in our society? I believe our life ethic and our desire to stand for the most vulnerable in our society will determine the course of our future. Now, I do not wish to over-dramatize our current societal norms, but I do believe we have reached a precipice. One would not have to venture too far into a history book to see why our life ethic matters. We could look back to the 16th, 17th, and 1800s at slavery in the United States, the 1930s and 40s at the Holocaust in Europe, or 1973 until present day at the abortion epidemic. These atrocities span centuries, but their commonalities are clear and are directly linked to a societal view of life and personhood. We reflect back today on a battered country that faced off in a civil war and rightly proclaim the days of slavery as some of America's darkest. We can easily read a historical account of Adolf Hitler's slaughtering of Jews and recognize the barbaric acts of the Nazis. These views are no longer refuted by mainstream society or academia. We can all agree that targeting and ultimately voiding a segment of the population of their personhood due to one's race or ethnicity is wrong and should be widely condemned. This is true in every case, it seems, except when it involves the unborn. For it is here where our society continues to struggle with the truth. The ruling and subsequent legalizing of abortion in 1973 codified the dehumanization of a segment of our population. And we need to marinate in that thought for a moment. Let me read it again. It is here where our society continues to struggle with the truth. The ruling and subsequent legalizing of abortion in 1973 codified the dehumanization of a segment of our population. This may be difficult for some to hear, but we must come to grips with this simple fact. Black lives, blue lives, white lives, and every life in between will not truly matter until life in the womb matters. This is not a political statement. This is a life ethics statement. Value will never be properly bestowed on a population if we fail to recognize where that population actually began. Many were silent during the time of slavery because they didn't believe in the personhood of a black man or woman. We saw this same silence during the Holocaust. Many refused to see a Jewish person as a human deserving of respect and dignity. Now, I look back on these historical truths in complete astonishment. How could we have been so naive? How could we have allowed for fellow citizens to be targeted, demonized, and extinguished? Sure, fear drove some of this, but denial drove most of it. Yet here we are in 2017, looking back over 43 years to almost 60 million lives lost to abortion. We have again allowed a segment of our population, although this time not based on race or ethnicity, to be voided of personhood. We have masked our silence in platitudes about clumps of cells or women's health, but the truth is quite clear. Regardless of what medical journals, scientific analyses, or religious texts say, we are comfortable with limiting personhood to those of us who make it out of the womb alive. Voiding personhood from a segment of the populace does not negate their true value. We tried that in the 16th, 17th, and 1800s, and in the 1930s and 40s, and now we look back in horror at the damage we caused. You see, I did not say this today to provoke outrage or to dangle quote-unquote red meat into the highly volatile political discourse of the day. Instead, I simply want us to be willing to recognize the commonalities in our behavior and the hypocrisy in our rhetoric. I believe that history will prove that our laws and court decisions on abortion were misguided and obtuse to reality. Millions of lives have been lost and millions more affected by the false sense of reality that somehow a baby in the womb is not a person. We have come a long way since 1973, but there is still yet much to do. And I pray we would grapple with this very real issue, not the blind spots. Notice the blind spots in our own lives and recognize that lives literally depend on our reaction and our steps forward. You see, it's easy in today's society to point fingers and say, you're a Nazi, or you act like Nazis, or whatever. We hear that a lot in politics. And so regardless of who's in office, when President Obama was in office, you had some folks saying, you're acting like Nazis. Now that President Trump's in the office, you have some folks saying, you're acting like Nazis. Everybody wants to make, you're Hitler, and everybody wants to point fingers. But if we pull back for a second, a lot of those arguments are based on nothing. They're not based on facts. But the atrocities that happened in the 30s and 40s and the attack of the Jewish people was real and shameful. And the people that allowed it to go on it's mind-boggling to me. And then I look back in our society and our culture, and I see what we did in our country with slavery and with civil rights and all of these issues. And the fact that it was allowed to go on for so long. As if when Scripture tells us God created man in his image, as if that only pertained to white man. That's crazy talk. But that was a reality for hundreds of years. But we now look back on it and go, how did we allow that to happen? Because we've come so far to the point that we had a black man as president of the United States of America. It's a pretty remarkable story. But then we look at the abortion epidemic. And since 1973, 60 million, roughly, lives lost to abortion. And we still have people in 2017 that want to claim that men can be women and women can be men and you should be able to use whatever bathroom you want. Those same people would claim that little boy or little girl in the womb is not a person, deserving of personhood, deserving of respect, deserving of dignity and love and a chance at life. That's the reality of where we are today. And so I understand when I make the comparisons that some people will say you're just trying to be overly dramatic. But I make those comparisons because many of us, many of our citizens, have close the blinds to what went on outside. And the issue of the day is the life issue. And so our life ethic, what we believe deep down about life, is going to drive the way we interact and the choices that we make and the legislation that's put forward. And so me saying that a baby inside the womb is a person and deserves personhood is not me being anti-woman, it's me being pro-woman. It's not me being anti-man, it's me being pro-man. And so it's important that we get that right. Because I do believe there will be a day where we look back, just like we look back on the Holocaust, just like we look back on slavery, just like we look back on civil rights, just like we look back on women's suffrage. There will be a day when we look back, our grandchildren look back and go, I cannot believe my grandparents allowed that to happen. We'll talk more when we come back.
When skies are gray, when skies are blue, morning, noon, and night time too.
And we're back. It's Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. Between music was good. You didn't see that at the Grammys the other night. Now, what we saw at the Grammys the other night was my kids going, she needs clothes on. She needs clothes on. I think she needs some clothes on. So at least we're doing something right at the house, right? So, and then my daughter is any dress. It doesn't matter how revealing. Isn't that a pretty dress, Daddy? And so Grammys are interesting nowadays to watch with your kids. They've always been interesting, and people have pushed the envelope. But that has nothing to do with what we're talking about today, but the music choices have been great. So today is Valentine's Day. We're celebrating love. We're celebrating life. And what we ended the last segment with was talking about personhood. And so the fact that, and I'll say this till I'm blue in the face, and I've said it on this show a ton of times, but we won't get the life issue right if we don't get it right in the womb. It just won't happen. You cannot claim that abortion is okay at any point during pregnancy and then claim that a three-year-old is a person and has personhood. It just doesn't make sense. Even not from a biblical standpoint, from a conceptual, from a scientific, secular standpoint, it just doesn't make sense. It's not consistent. Now you can say that and be inconsistent intellectually, and that's a discussion to be had. But if you want to be consistent intellectually, then it's life in the womb. And if we protect that life, then we can talk about laws and everything to protect all life. But that's the part that's really been, really since I went to Washington to the March for Life a few weeks back. That's the part that I keep dealing with and keep going through in my head is personhood. And the fact that we live in the greatest country on the face of this planet that has seen some amazing, amazing things occur because of our founders, because of God's grace, because of the work that's been done. But yet we struggle still to admit. And if you look at polls, I mean, it's really probably half and half. Struggle to admit personhood inside the womb. Now, we can say all day long that it's, you know, people will say, well, it's a woman's choice. Well, it's, you know, that's up to the woman. I hear people tell me all the time, well, I'm pro-life, but that's still up to the woman. Well, then that's just as bad as saying I'm against slavery, but that's up to the South. Or I'm against slavery, or I'm against segregation, but I'm not going to get involved. I'm against the Holocaust, but we just need to sing louder when the trains go by the church. That type of mindset allows for destruction to move forward. And so if we don't vocalize our stance on life and personhood, and if we don't stand up for those who can't stand up for themselves, then ultimately you can tell me all you want that you're pro-life, But you're not. You're just not. And so, and that's okay if we can have that conversation. Maybe you're not. Well, let's see where we can find agreements. Let's see where we can come to some common ground. But if we don't, we will never get to common ground if we're not willing to be honest. And our rhetoric in that matters. Because we are very hypocritical when a lot of times when we have these conversations. And so it does go back to personhood. Somebody posted on social media earlier a comment to the blog today, and what they said was they posted an ultrasound picture of their baby at 6 weeks old. And they said, that's my daughter. That's my baby at 6 weeks, and I heard her heartbeat. That's personhood. We knew then, no one looked at her at 6 weeks of pregnancy and said, I wonder what you're going to have. Now somebody might have said that and said, are you going to have a boy or are you going to have a girl? But no one looked at her and said, I wonder if it's going to be like a cat or, I don't know, like a dog or a donkey. No one said that. Because we all know that it's a baby. And so if we don't get it right in the womb, we won't ever get it right. And that's why it's important even for the church and for us as believers to look and say, where do I stand on personhood? Is there a segment of the population that I devalue? Is there a segment of the population that I don't care about? These are questions that we need to have with ourselves. And conversations that we even need to have internally of where we land on those issues. But when we see legislation and Supreme Court decisions and an actual code, law, statutes that are written to say that a segment of the population, and in this case it's the unborn, do not have rights and do not have personhood, that should concern us greatly. Greatly. And so it's important to have these conversations. It's important to have places like Hope Resource Center all over the country doing the work that we do. Because what we are able to do when that patient walks in the door is we're able to look at them and say, not only do you have value and matter to us, but that baby has value and matters to us. That's why we open our doors, not just for the baby, but for you as well. But if we don't get it right in the womb, then we can't look that female in the eye, that patient in the eye, and say, really say she matters. Because then what we're saying is, well, you've mattered for part of your life, but there was a segment during your life while you were growing inside of your mother where you didn't matter to me at all. Or we do the other side of it where we say, the only time that you matter is that 9 months in the womb. Once you're outside of the womb, then good luck to you. And both those are wrong. And so if we get our life ethic right, and we care deeply about the personhood and dignity of people, then that must include the womb. But it must also include outside of the womb. And today I was looking at, we had a church, First Baptist Lenore City, brought us a ton of baby bottles and full of cash check and coins. And when it's all said and done, I'm guessing it's going to be around $5,000 or so dollars, maybe more than that. And I looked at all of that today. And I was blown away because, you know, the local church continues to blow us away and amaze us with their partnership and work in this life work that we do. But I looked at it and I went, don't you dare tell me the local church isn't loving its community. Don't you dare tell me the local church doesn't care about the unborn and doesn't care about moms and dads. Because we see it every single day. Every single day. And you know what? Those baby bottles that they fill up in the change and in dollars and checks that are brought in, they're not doing that just because they're pro-baby. They get it. They understand the life ethic. That man and woman were created in God's image. And that means that the people we come in contact with are image bearers. And that means that baby and that mom matters. And those funds will allow us to not just protect baby, but it will allow us to love on that mom. To love on the patient that finds out she's not pregnant. To love on the patient that finds out she had a miscarriage. To love on the patient that needs an STD test or treatment. To love on the patient that needs a baby shower. To love on a patient that needs parenting classes. So the local church is doing more charitable work for the life movement than anybody. It's not even close. And so we're making strides, and I love sitting down with pastors now that give me the opportunity to speak, or I hear the heart of that pastor, and there's no doubt they care deeply about the life issue, but it is not constrained to the womb. That they care deeply about that mom. They care deeply about the dad involved and the family involved and the future of these kids. And churches that are fostering, and churches that are adopting, and churches that are getting engaged in their community to make a difference. And it really is something special to see. So we are seeing strides in the right direction. We are seeing abortion numbers decline. Those are all positive things. So now's the time for us to really get a handle of our life ethic and go forward with it. And tell the world that every life has value and deserves our love. We'll be back.
I got you, babe. I got you, babe.
And we're back with Sonny and Cher. That marriage worked out well. Yep. I sung that. My wife and I sung that at our wedding. That's a song. That's a good one. I Got You, Babe. That was, we all love that song. And it didn't work out for Sonny and Cher, but the song did. And the song still holds on to this day. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Again, thank you so much for listening. You can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com. You can get the podcast. It'll be up before the end of the week as well on iTunes and other places. One thing I do want to note, this Sunday I will be speaking at Calvary Knoxville, and that's at 3330 West Governor John Sevier Highway here in Knoxville. So I'll be speaking at the church, kind of tag-teaming the message this Sunday with one of the pastors there on staff, talking about life and the importance of life, again, getting it right in the womb and all the way through life to the end of life. And so our life ethic matters, not just here on the show, but as we have conversations with neighbors and as we have conversations at our church, we need to get that right. And so would love to see you out there. Or I'm sure their sermons are online as well, so you'll be able to hear that sometime next week once that sermon is put on their website. So as we finish up the show, a couple points I want to make. So if you don't take away anything else, maybe you just now are starting to tune in and you're like, I'm listening to the last segment of the show. A couple things I want you to take away. Choose love and assume the best. So do that with your spouse. Do that with your neighbors. Do that with your coworkers. Choose love and assume the best of them. Because at times we always assume the worst. We always assume that someone's out to get us. We always assume that someone hates us or whatever. Look at what your life would look like if you assume the best of people. And if you chose to love people. And so remember that. Another takeaway from tonight's show is our life ethic matters. And so I want to point out, we will never get the life issue right with doctor-assisted suicide, with terminally ill, with any of that, with black lives, with white lives, with blue lives, with any lives. We will never get that truly right if we don't get the life ethic right in the womb. Because as we've said on here multiple times, if you devalue life at the beginning, then ultimately you're devaluing life everywhere. And so reflect on your life ethic. Reflect on your beliefs. Think about where we are as a society in 2017 and the things that we say and the things that our culture says and our society says and our lawmakers say and the inconsistencies when it comes to life. So they will call people science deniers when they don't agree with climate change. But yet they don't see that they're denying science when they don't believe life begins at conception. See, that's inconsistent. It's not intellectually honest. And so those are important conversations to have with yourself before. Yeah, I'm always telling you to engage with your neighbor, engage with your community, but please have that conversation with yourself before you go and seek to have a conversation with another. Think through these issues for yourself. Read up on these issues. Read up on these issues as you think through your life ethic. And then the article that I mentioned at the very beginning of the show about the positive outlook of marriage, you can find it at the erlc.com, erlc.com. And it just talks about the positive sides of marriage, not biblically necessarily, but scientifically and sociology studies that look at it and say, hey, marriage is good for these reasons. And so look through that. I think it's important. So as we wind down tonight, and some of you may be on your way to a nice dinner, candlelit, at McDonald's or Chick-fil-A. Those are good places to choose. Cheap, probably not going to be a long line to wait. So tonight would be a good night to do that. But if not, maybe you're going to a real nice restaurant. Think through these issues. But as you're sitting there with your significant other tonight, remember that tomorrow morning, Valentine's is over. And so tomorrow morning, are you going to choose to love and assume the best of them? Can you make that commitment? Can you? As Smooth Operator plays in the background? I think you can. You'll be better for it, and your marriage will be better for it, and your relationships will be better for it. Always enjoy talking to you. We'll be back next week.